First of all, I'm very pleased to be here today and have the opportunity to discuss some of my work. And as Roger was saying, it's probably good that Jonathan spoke first, because actually it's what I'll be talking about today is related to what he spoke of. And we're going to be dealing in the LSEC paradigm. And if you recall, that was sort of the class of operations. In his resource theory, in the entanglement setting, was the LSEC operations. So, I gave a talk last winter at IQC on some of these results. So, if you were for that talk, you'll notice there'll be some overlap. However, there's quite a bit of new stuff here. So, you'll something new for everyone. So, if at any time you need further explanation, just raise your hand. Stop. I can use the chalkboard, but I'm tethered here to the mouse. So, okay. So the main problem of investigation here is we're in the multipartite setting, and we fix our dimensions. And the question is, how does LSEC increase as we allow more rounds of measurement to be performed in this setting? So that this is the chief problem of investigation. And so to tackle this in this talk, I'll just outline things here. So first, I want to just give a brief introduction to the class of LSEC operations. So in a little more depth than Jonathan discussed. And then I want to talk about some previous work that's been done on the question posed in the last slide around dependence in LSEC. And then I want to turn to a specific problem that was first studied in 2006 by Ben Fortescue and Hoi-Kwang Lo. And the problem they looked at was a random distillation of a W-class state. So in particular, they studied the three-qubit W-class state. And they asked, the problem they looked at was converting that state into bipartite entanglements where you don't specify the two target parties. And there'll be symbols to state what I just said in a few slides. So. But that's the problem there. And it turns out that this a very innocent looking problem actually illuminates quite a bunch of key properties of LSEC. So there's much to be gained by studying this particular problem. And hopefully in this talk, I'll show some of those properties. For instance, I'm going to take a closer examination of that, and I'll prove a lower bound on LSEC round number for this particular problem. And then we'll generalize their problem slightly and show that actually there are certain random distillation problems that require an infinite number of rounds. Okay. So just to start sort of here from the very basics in one slide here. So we have our general quantum operations. So we represent our measurements by a set of matrices there that satisfy the completion relationship. And then the act of measuring is a stochastic process where we have our pre-measurement state to our post-measurement state given by the probability there. But we can also sort of add an additional step in the measurement here, and that's if we include forgetting information or discarding outcomes. So if we performed a measurement and we knew originally that it was one of those three outcomes, but then for some reason we didn't record it, we forgot the information, or someone else made the measurements, then we account for this by summing up. And this is where we recover sort of the trace preserving completely positive map here or a quantum channel. So this is the general quantum operation setting. And now we can move to local quantum operations. So here we have an n-partite system. So there's n parties that are spatially separated. And we suppose that one of the parties, the kth party, is going to perform a local quantum operation. So we represent that by we have a pre-measurement state, and party k performs some map there, and the identity is performed by all other parties. So the way that it's written right here we're just, this is sort of assumes that it's a trace preserving map. So party K has performed this measurement and doesn't announce the result to anyone. So it's just a completely positive trace preserving map by party K. But we can ask, well, what if party K were actually to broadcast his or her measurement results? So then how would that change the setting here? And when this occurs, this is the LLCC paradigm, because we've taken our local quantum operations and now we're adding to its classical communication. And here are the two usual suspects here. We have Alice and Bob, who share a quantum system, and that is originally in the state Psi AB, but they also have a classical communication channel there. And just for simplicity here, just to sort of get the intuition of what LLCC is, so Alice is going to perform a two outcome measurement here. And her measurement is characterized by the set of matrices there. And there's one or two outcomes that happen. So if outcome zero happens, she announces it to Bob. If outcome one happens, she announces that to Bob. And based on that particular outcome, it affects what measurement Bob performs in the next round. So here, if it was zero, he performs this measurement. If Alice's outcome was one, he performs this set. And so then in total, there are four possible outcomes that can occur. And that now Bob announces his outcome back to Alice, and then this goes back and forth, and the whole measurement process can be represented by a tree of possibilities here. So there's 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, all the different outcomes there are represented by the tree. And in terms of the cross operators, those are just formed by a concatenation of all the local operators performed in each round there. And we can concatenate them all together into one big total operator. So what this shows then is that each branch in the LLCC protocol corresponds to a particular tensor product of the operator. And this is sort of a key observation here, because this gives us one sort of necessary feature of an LLCC operation. So here again, just to write it out more clearly. So in every LLCC operation, we say that a necessary property is that the measurement operators correspond to each branch here of lambda. They preserve the product form, and they also satisfy completion relation. But in more generally speaking, any sort of cross operators that satisfy these two conditions is known as a separable operator. So what we've shown is that actually LLCC is a separable map, but it's not true that they're the same. The two classes are actually different. And this result here was first observed in 1999 in a paper titled Non-Locality Without Entanglement. And they showed that they gave an example of a set of product states that cannot be distinguished using LLCC perfectly, but using separable operations, they can be distinguished. So this is slightly problematic because it raises the question, well, how can we characterize LLCC operations? I mean, if this were an equality, it would be nice. Then we could just say, well, LLCC is given by those two conditions right there. But that's not the case. So it makes things more difficult to say precisely when a set of operations is LLCC implementable and when it is not. So we won't go into this question so much right here, but we won't dig into it too deep in this talk. But instead, all we'll really think about LLCC is sort of, we'll think of it as sort of an algorithm or a set of instructions, and which I'll describe a little bit more on this slide. So just to fix the terminology, we'll say that one round of LLCC is a local measurement and a broadcast of that result. And we won't include local unitary operations in a round of action here. And the reason being is that because the local unitary is just a deterministic action, we don't get a branching effect. So we won't include that in a round. All right, and then we can just think of just an LOCC protocol as just basically a set of instructions, and that satisfy four properties. And first, it identifies one party that's the acting agent in that round. And it specifies the particular measurement that that party should perform given all the previous outcomes. It also describes the local unitary operations. And four, it issues a special halt command. So whenever a certain string of outcomes are obtained, the whole process stops. So I think this is sort of a nice way of thinking of it, because it's almost like a non-deterministic Turing machine or computational process here, where you feed in these set of instructions, and either it'll halt at a certain time or it won't halt. And so then you can say that a finite round LOCC protocol is one that necessarily halts after n rounds, where an infinite round protocol is one that does not. And so this distinction between finite round and infinite round is exactly what we want to look at in this talk here. So, any questions thus far? Anything? Yes.
Bound, but it
unbounded, yeah, right?
But it still does halt at some point. It's just you can't a priori put a bound, or you're allowing the possibility of actually continuing forever,
looping forever. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So some previous results on round dependence. The first two here that we'll talk about comes from the problem of entanglement distillation. And this example here, it was given in 1996. So imagine that Alice and Bob have a Werner state here, or they have many copies of this state, and they want to try to distill EPR pairs from it. And so what Bennett and co-workers were able to show is that if you allow one-way communication, so only Alice makes her measurements and broadcasts, only one way, there's a one-way channel, you cannot distill pure entanglement from it. So the distillation rate is zero. However, if you allow two-way classical communication, you actually can distill some EPR pairs from it. So this was the first real result to show, in the quantum setting at least, that two-way LOCC is more powerful than one-way that I know of. Maybe there are others. And then another sort of procedure is an entanglement distillation procedure known as a recurrence method here. And this is sort of an indefinite number of rounds, and it improves the fidelity of your Werner state. So originally in let's say round N, you have the fidelity, again, you have lots of copies. So this is in the mini copy setting here. And each copy has some fidelity given by F. Then you perform this two-way process on it, and so you end up consuming half of your states there, but the other half remaining have a greater fidelity. So this is sort of a process that uses more rounds. Okay, so those two tasks are entanglement distillation. It's sort of another result. This is by Samuel Popescu and Hoi Kuang Lo, where they show that any bipartite pure state transformation can be completed in just one round of LOCC. So this is where Alice would perform a local measurement, broadcast the result to Bob, and then Bob just performs some error correction or local unitary. And this for any dimensions there. Next, for the task of distinguishing states, it's known that two-way classical communication strengthens state distinguishability, and there's quite a few papers where this result is evident. But one really nice example is by Shin and Duan, where they actually they construct a collection of n squared minus 2n plus 3 product states that require 2n minus 2 rounds in order to perfectly distinguish them. So this is sort of a lower bound result. To my knowledge, this is the first real, like, lower bounds result that scales. The only issue here is that your dimensions are, it depends on your dimensions here. So if you remember the first question that I asked, or that we want to investigate, is we want to fix the dimensions of our systems. So And here you only get that lower bound that increases if you increase the total dimensions of your system. All right. And if anyone else has come across any other problems where results where the rounds have where they're shown round dependence, I'd be very happy to learn about that. So moving on to the task of random distillation, which is, as I indicated earlier, is really good at illuminating key subtleties in LLCC. So the task now is, it's a 3-qubit state here, the W state. And Alice, Bob, and Charlie, they want to convert it into an EPR pair, so tripartite to bipartite conversion, where they're not going to a priori specify the target pair. And so a protocol that's Ben Fortescue and Haikuang Lo came up with was said, all right, well, let's do this by performing a series of weak measurements. And so in particular, it's a measurement given by this form here. And epsilon is going to be small, so it's going to be a weak measurement. And each party is going to perform this particular measurement here. And what happens is, as you can see, if they both get the zero outcome, excuse me, if all three of them get the zero outcome, it leaves your state invariant. So it just doesn't change your W. You go, just input W, you get the same state out. If only one state gets this outcome here, then it leaves an EPR pair. So there's three different possibilities there. If more than one state gets outcome one, then you have left with the product state. So that's a failure. But the key point of this is if you look at the probabilities. So the most likely scenario is that they all get the zero outcome. This happens probability 1 minus epsilon squared. The probability of getting an EPR pair is of order epsilon, but the probability of failure is of order epsilon squared. So if in small epsilon, yes, you're gonna have to reiterate this process over and over again, but the probability of failure actually can be made arbitrarily small compared to the probability of getting an EPR pair. So the Fortescue Low protocol is an indefinite round protocol in that once you get the W state back, you perform the same measurement on it again, and you get this recursive style protocol. So we can analyze this a little bit. So in 3N rounds, the total probability of EPR yield is given by that formula there. And in particular, if you just choose these parameters, epsilon is of a quarter and N is 3, then you get a total probability of about 0.7. And this is an interesting point because if you were to just consider a specified party distillation, so instead of doing the random party, if we said, okay, it's only going to be a success if Alice and Bob share the entanglement in the end, the maximum is 2/3. So this shows that its random distillation can actually improve over specified party distillation just within N equals 3 rounds. But now if we take the limit as N goes to infinity, we get this. This is your total probability, which is very close, can be arbitrarily close to 1, although it's strictly less than 1. Okay, so this is one particular protocol for performing the task. The Fortescue Low protocol of the random distillation task. But we can ask the question, well, so in this case, we have a relationship between the round number, N, and the total probability. It's given by this. But for consider a general protocol, right? So is there a general relationship between success probability and round number? And it turns out the answer is yes. And so in the next few slides, I want to sort of sketch out this relationship. And I'm going to sketch out the proof for it a little bit. But the idea is that, just intuitively before we get into it, the idea is that we want to consider the most general LLCC process that's going to accomplish this transformation. And we want to sort of reduce it down to the Fortescue Low style protocol. In other words, we want to show that a recursive style protocol that they devised is actually optimal, and that we can perform this reduction. And so, again, to just answer the question, that previous question in the affirmative, the strategy is going to be, first, we're going to try to reduce a general LLCC protocol to a recursive style transformation. And in order to do this, just going to clean up some notation here. So this is a general W class state. And what we mean by W class state is it's any state that is obtainable from the W state, the square root of 1/3. So if these are all 1/3 here and that's 0, that was the original W class state. And we want to consider that state and all states obtainable from it using LLCC. And that's what we define as the W class state. And it turns out that any state that's obtainable from the W class state takes this form, which is nice because it's just a four parameter class of states, real numbers. And so we can represent it in this vector notation here. So when you see the three component vector there, there's that correspondence. Yes.
LLCC or stochastic?
It's actually stochastic LLCC.
Okay.
So it's, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so the first sort of observation is that what we can do is in any general LLCC protocol, we can break it down into a sequence of weak measurements. And what's nice then is that these component values will actually evolve continuously. If we perform weak enough measurements, we can actually get a continuous evolution of the component vectors. So we start off with our original state here, and it'll evolve in states of this form. But we can assume that these guys, the components, are always evolving continuously. One sort of technical point is on the previous slide. I said that there's a 0, 0, 0 term here, and in this here there's no 0, 0 term. It turns out you can prove this would actually be a step 0 that. It's optimal to never introduce that 0, 0, 0 component. So you always want to keep them in this form. Okay? So that's what's going on. So we start off with our W state, and we let it evolve using LLCC. And what we want to do is we want to take a general protocol, and we want to divide it into blocks. And the reason doing this is it'll enable us to sort of get a grasp on a general transformation. If we can take any transformation and divide it into blocks, that will be easy, make our lives easier for analysis. So we start off with a W state and continues here. It's just a little bit of notation. So each node here is a measurement. So this is a round here. This is first round, second round, third round, etc. Each node indicates a measurement. The red little lines there, those indicate outcomes, states that are no longer tripartite entangled. So this could be an EPR pair, this could be a product state. But any path here, this is still a W-class state. This is a tripartite entangled state. So we can consider any protocol like this. And we want to chop it into blocks. So the idea is that using this fact that this evolves continuously, we can always find a point in the protocol. We can always chop it up where the states that are obtained here have this form. And the form is that the two largest components are equal. And so we call these block states, wherever we've obtained a state where the two largest components are equal. So some intuition. I mean, why are we just pulling this out of thin air? Well, the idea is that, remember, we want to obtain one of three states. We want to obtain EPR-AB, EPR-AC, EPR-BC. And the idea is that in order to obtain one of those states, we first have to pass through a state of this form. In other words, in order to obtain an Alice Bob maximally entangled state, we must pass through a state of this form, where they have the same component and Bob has a lesser value. Likewise for AC and likewise BC. So we can chop our protocol into this form. Okay, so that's sort of step one in this reduction. Step two is to show that actually, in general, we can allow for each of these block states to be the W state. So in the previous slide, we just had this. This was sort of the condition that they were AAB, but actually it's you can assume that they're all the same values, that they're actually W states in each of the blocks. And the reasoning here is if this was the original protocol, where here is one of these block states, we can modify it into a state of this form if Charlie just performs a two outcome measurement. So we start from here. Charlie performs the two outcome measurements. In one outcome, Alice and Bob are maximally entangled. In the other outcome, there's the W state there. The idea is that we take our original protocol and we just modify it like such. Now, what I'm showing here, all these modifications, this is just sort of the sketch of it. You actually have to prove that when you go through and make these modifications, you don't lower the overall probability. But this is just sort of the idea. Yes? These dots here, okay, so these dots are actually points of measurement. Okay, so a measurement is performed here, and then the edges, for each edge there's a different state, and that's the post-measurement state of the edges.
But that's for one of the parties, not for all three.
So this will be a tripartite entangled state. So here's, maybe this is a measurement performed by Charlie, and then this would be the residual state after that, the two possible states.
I see, so when you draw this, like,
so yeah, so
W, that means
this is sort of, this was the idea of chopping it into blocks. So this would be the first block, this is the second block, this is the third block, and then on each of these edges here is a W state that's obtained. So the state corresponding to each of these edges is a W state.
So if you had gone through each of those paths,
you would hit the W state. Yes.
W state.
Yeah. Right.
So you map any protocol into one of them.
Into one. Right. Right.
So either you have broken tripartite entanglement or you have a W.
That's right, okay. Exactly. Okay, and so then step three in this reduction is to show that, okay, so now that you have this, where you have W's states all along, it's kind of crazy. You don't actually need that. You can actually simplify it down into this form, where instead of having branching, you just have one smooth branch of this. Each party is performing a two outcome measurements, where one outcome is tripartite entangled, the other outcome is broken tripartite entangled, just like Marco said there. So, and this is exactly the Fortescue-Lowe protocol. I mean, this was their idea, is that each party performed the two outcome measurements, and the most likely possibility is that you continue along here, you get the W state back, you continue along again, you get the W state back. So we've shown that you can actually take the most general protocol and reduce it down into this form. And so now this makes things easier because it's just a reduced problem. And in particular, we can just look at the first measurement made at this point. So so this is just one particular block here, and we want to consider the measurement made right there, and it's of this form right there. And then just computing the probability of getting a W, so the probability of continuing along all the way and getting a W there is given by that, whereas the probability of getting an EPR pair is given by that formula there. All right, so now this is for one particular block, and now we want to consider n blocks. And so we just have this iteration here, and it turns out to be an n parameter optimization problem in nice closed form like this. And it turns out that the optimal, so the optimal solution here is given by AK. So this is this right here, the AK, this is the parameter of the measurement in the kth round. Okay, so again, just so you can see the operator there. And what we see then is in the most optimal strategy is that in each successive block, a stronger measurement is performed. So in the very first measurement of the protocol, you want the weakest measurement to be performed. And then as the protocol progresses, the party makes a stronger and stronger measurement. And then finally, the last round is the strongest measurement. And when this occurs, then you get the optimal probability is upper bounded by 1 minus 1. At n blocks, yeah. Yeah. But right, exactly. Right, yeah, so each block consists of three rounds. And so then you have this relationship here. So the minimum number of rounds, you can flip it around. So in solving for round number, you have this lower bound on the number of rounds. And so here's the graph of the result there. This is kind of nice because it shows that there's this trade-off between success probability and the number of rounds you need to do in LSEC. So if you want to get a very highly successful transformation, you need to put in a lot of rounds of LSEC. And as far as I know, this is sort of the first real lower bound result in terms of LSEC processing, round numbers, what you need. Yes? Yes, yes.
So it's actually determined.
This is tight, yeah. Right. Yeah, just use this, using this.
Yeah.
This is tight there, right. Okay, and so now just in case we're curious, we say, well, how does the optimal protocol compare to the Fortescue-Low protocol? And so in their original paper, they compute for n rounds, you get that result. The optimal protocol is actually better. And so you can compare the two there. And so the question is, well, why is there this gap? I mean, we showed that a general protocol can be reduced to the Fortescue-Low style protocol, but there was a slight difference in that in the optimal protocol, within each block, the measurement changes for the parties. So in the Fortescue-Low protocol originally, each party performed the same measurements. It was that M0, M1. But actually, optimally, you want to have a little more post-selection, so you allow for more communication, and the parties change their measurements.
What's on the x-axis?
This is the probability total.
So
why
is it 20?
Oh, shoot. Okay, so this should be flopped. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
Oh, I see.
Sorry. Right. Number.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so in summary now, for this particular transformation, you have this lower bound on the number of rounds, and that is tight, as Will pointed out. And so then in no finite rounds, LSEC protocol, is that possible? So now what about an infinite round LSEC? Okay, so in infinite round LSEC, it turns out the answer is also no, it's not possible. And the thing is, in infinite round, the argument that I just gave in the past few slides doesn't apply anymore because we assume that there was n rounds. So we assumed it was a finite. And it no longer is, that argument doesn't hold for infinite round. But it's not possible. And in order to prove this, you have to construct some new entanglement monotones. And I'll just leave that there. And this will be a topic of another talk. This particular entanglement monotone construction. But just for the time being, note that this can't be done in infinite rounds either. Yes?
Does that mean that the supremum of probabilities achievable by a finite round isn't 1?
The supremum probability...
The supremum of the probability which can be achieved in a finite number of rounds,
yes,
is not 1. Does it mean that? Does it look kind of like 1?
Is not right. So this supremum would be 1.
Oh, it is 1. Okay.
Yes, but you can't achieve it.
I guess I don't quite understand what that means. Right? Like, what does it mean that you can't achieve it with infinite rounds?
You mean in finite rounds?
With infinite rounds, like.
Oh. Okay. So okay. Right. So even if you allow for protocols where there's no end in sight. You know, if you always allow for the option to just keep going.
Oh, I see what you mean. Right. Okay. Yeah.
Then even in that case.
Right.
As the number of rounds tends to infinity, this probability tends to 1 using your probability.
Yes. Yeah.
I guess I just, in some things, it seems like they would say, like, what can be achieved by infinite rounds of LSEC is precisely the, say, the supremum or infinitum.
No, but there's a difference there because the way we define infinite round LCC.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not.
Yeah.
I guess because explicitly at the last round you have a strong measurement, so you have to stop.
You have to stop. Exactly. That's exactly it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay, so can we relax the problem and obtain a transformation that is exactly probability one? And so this is what I'll talk about now. And so the answer is yes. So we can provide it. We can relax it a little bit. And the way we're going to relax it is reduce the amount of distilled entanglements. And so what we're going to use is the concurrence as our quantifier of entanglements, and just some nice properties of the concurrence there. It's one if and only if you have an EPR state. And so then the generalized random distillation problem is we still demand maximal entanglement between Alice and Bob and Alice Charlie, but now the Bob Charlie state is going to be weakly entangled. And so we want to study the problem with respect to a variable concurrence between as it goes from 0 to 1. But we still demand, that it's fully deterministic. And just to review some nice properties of the concurrence, there's this quantity called the concurrence of assistance. And it's defined given here. So in an n by 2 by 2 states, we look at the Bob-Charlie reduced density matrix, and we consider all possible decompositions of it. And then we take the maximum average concurrence in the overall decompositions. And sort of the intuition here is that this is the maximum concurrence that can be generated if Alice agrees to help. Because Alice can realize any ensemble of pure states for Bob Charlie with choosing a particular measurement. And so this is the maximum average concurrence that she can produce for Bob and Charlie. And what's really nice about the concurrence of assistance is that there's a closed formula for it, given in terms of the eigenvalues of that matrix there. Some other useful properties is that it is an entanglement monotone for n by 2 by 2 states. And it also characterizes bipartite to tripartite conversions. So you can go from a tripartite pure entangled state to a bipartite pure entangled state if the concurrence is non-increasing. So these two properties are going to be very important for what we show on the next slide. Okay, one other thing is that any state obtainable from W has a concurrence of assistance strictly less than one. So that's any W class state has concurrence less than one. And so then a consequence of this is that if these are any W class states there, those two transformations are impossible. So here LLCC is meaning deterministic transformations. The SLLCC would be probabilistic. But so these are not possible because this is a concurrence of one and this is a concurrence of assistance strictly less than one. So what does that mean for our problem? Okay, well, what that means is that actually the last round that we can obtain one of these states cannot be the final round. Because if it's the final round, then and it would be we would need to make a deterministic transformation. And neither of these states can be obtained deterministically. So there must be some final round, some n before n, where that is the last post-measurement state. And so we can say, well, what does that mean then? What does that require? So that means that in this particular case, it's going to be Charlie performing the measurements, and this would be round m, so it would have to be a state of this form. Charlie performs some measurements, and one of the outcomes is an Alice-Bob EPR pair, and then another outcome is this W state here, and then maybe some other stuff. But the point is because this was the final round in which an EPR pair was obtained, this state here must be converted into our psi BC. Remember, there are three options here for this transformation. Either we get EPR AC, EPR AB, or psi BC. And since this is the last round where we obtain EPR AB, this state must be converted into psi. So now we use the concurrence of assistance properties that this transformation is, again, only possible if the concurrence is no greater than that. So we just want to maximize the possible concurrence of assistance of this state, and we find that it's upper bounded by square root of 1/2. So just sort of putting that argument together, then this upper bounds the concurrence of that state to the square root of 1/2. Okay, so that's an upper bound. But now we can show that is actually achievable. And just to show that, I'm going to construct an explicit protocol where we obtain this. So it's another one of these weak measurement protocols. And so we start with W state there. And first round is Charlie performing a measurement. So here's our measurement operators there, and then his measurement's parameterized by alpha there. So Charlie performs the measurements, and there are two outcomes. One is this EPR AB, another is a W state of that form. Next, Alice performs a measurement, and one outcome is a bipartite state, which has concurrency squared to 1/2. This is what we want, right? We want to have that. And now Bob performs the next measurements. Again, it's a two outcome measurement. And one outcome will be the AC, another will be a state of that, a tripartite state of that form. But that can be converted into the bipartite state because the concurrence of the systems is just right for that. So this is good then. So this is a four round transformation, and we've obtained the states that we want to obtain. We have EPRAB, EPRAC, and two bipartite entangled states with the required concurrence. Okay, so in summary then, so for this particular transformation, if we demand deterministic success probability in finite round LSEC, the concurrence must satisfy that. And it's possible in four rounds to actually achieve that. Yes?
In EPR pairs, I mean, not deterministically between one of the two.
Okay.
So I suppose that PAB was equal to PAC was equal to PBC.
That the
three probabilities were equal.
Okay.
Is that right?
In the optimal protocol.
Yeah.
You can devise it like that is the case. Yes.
So, do you know how they are divided here, like? Of getting
right. So in this case, this is always 1/3.
Always
1/3, and these two are not the same. And the it depends on actually who measures first. So Charlie measured first here, and so that means that this will have the greatest probability of being obtained. Okay, so this is the finite round result. And now the question is, what about infinite round protocols? And we can show we can do considerably better if we allow for the infinite round or the unbounded round setting. Consider any concurrence strictly less than one. Again, we know when it's one, it's not possible. And so now we want to devise a particular measurement that is a function of your concurrence. All right, so same measurement, same style of protocol, and it's Charlie who performs again. In this case, the outcome is EPRAB. Then Alice comes again, and now the state here is of this form. And the concurrence of this state here is C, just by definition of the concurrence. And then Bob comes, and he performs a measurement on this particular state. One outcome is EPRAC, and the other state is the W state. And so now we do exactly what we've been doing. Pretty much the idea of the whole talk is now we can reiterate this process. So we put the W back in, and we perform the same type of measurement on it. And when we do this, and we do this unboundedly, there's no stopping. We just keep doing this. Each time we get the W, we perform the same measurement on it. And if we perform the analysis here, so this is sort of the question you're asking, Marco, is you can actually look at the probabilities per round. And we find that just to evaluate these, we just have a geometric series here. And probability of AB total is given by this expression. AC is that, and BC is 1/3. And what's the key here is that they all sum up to one. So there's no probability of failure at all. If you always allow for sort of a bailout option, you always allow it to go on for another round. That as long as you can keep reiterating this protocol, then you can always do it, the whole thing with probability one. So then sort of to summarize the big picture here, if your concurrence is one, then you have the lower bound on the number of rounds given in terms of your success probability there. On the other hand, if you have a concurrence in this region here, but you demand that your probability total is one, then the transformation requires an infinite number of rounds. And if your concurrence is less than or equal to square root of 1/2, then you still require deterministic, then it can be done in four rounds. And sort of graphing results B and C, you get this sort of discontinuity here, where if C is zero, then you can do it just in a two-round transformation. And then it's four rounds all the way up to square root of 1/2, but then you get this jump up to infinite round. And at one again, it's not possible to do. So we can talk about some additional questions here. Actually, first I should point out, if you were to weaken in these two cases, if you were to weaken this, so it's not one, but you allow for that for an arbitrary small amount less than one, it's possible to do in finite rounds, but this same upper bound holds. Okay. So, additional question. So, we've been just looking at three qubit transformations. Are there lower bounds on the number of rounds for bipartite tasks? For bipartite pure state transformations, we know that there's not. But perhaps in the mixed state transformations. And one reason I suspect that maybe there's a similar result here is there are mixed state transformations that require separable operations to perform, but not LOCC. So there's a gap between separable operations and LOCC in the mixed states. Maybe there's also certain transformations that require a certain number of LOCC rounds, also in mixed state transformations. Another question is, determine the class of multipartite state transformations that are feasible with one-way classical communication. I believe for tripartite states, this result is known. For three qubit state transformations, it's known, but in general, it'd be good to know. Also, look at this from sort of information theoretic perspective. The original proof of non-locality without entanglement, the proof was given and it used tools from information theory. So maybe there's some way to look at this from that perspective. So another question is there a possible connection between the multi-round LOCC and the undecidability of measurement occurrence shown in reference 11? So this is a recent paper by Jens Eisert and Marcus Mueller where they show the undecidability of measurement occurrence. And sort of the setup there is that they consider one particular measurement. And it's a recursive thing where you take the outcome of the measurement, you put it back into your measurement device, and you keep reiterating this. And so then you get a similar branching effect, because maybe the first measurement, you get one outcome, you put that back into the measurement device, you get another outcome. So you get a similar type of branching effect. And to decide whether or not there is some particular branch that will never occur, they show is undecidable. And you can see that it's very similar to the idea here where we had this recursion thing where we keep applying the same measurements onto our W state. So there might be some connection here between that and decidability questions. So that's it. And I just want to end with an advertisement here. So this is at QIP. I'll be speaking a little bit more about it's slightly related to this, but it's the difference between separable operations and W-type entanglement. Separable operations in LOCC using the W-type entanglement setting. And this is work done by my boss, Hoi Kwang Lo, and a student in our research group, Wei Ku. And this is on the last day, and I know it's the first thing in the morning, and there's the rump session the night before, but you know, I promise it'll be exciting. So here are just some of the references of things we talked about. And many thanks to all. Let's just point out the people in particular. So I thank Andreas Winter, who I discussed sort of these ideas with and this problem with many times. My boss, Hoi Kwang, Wei, who also is a joint collaborator on some of the other stuff, and also Debbie Long, who I've discussed this problem with on various occasions. And again, my African cichlids. I try to throw them in all talks because they're good. So.
Okay, so any more questions?
Yes.
So maybe just to, perhaps you already said this, but to clarify this idea of infinite round LOCC, would it be fair to say that it's an LOCC protocol with unbounded rounds that halts with probability one? Is that the same? Because I can see the distinction between what,
Because in that setting where we did give that example, the failure is probability zero, and that would be, in that case, the failure is all going on forever, I keep getting the W state, and that just keeps getting smaller and smaller.
Right, which you can imagine can be distinct from the idea of just taking the closure of many rounds, because some of the limit sequences you have to go along to get to the points are going to have the failure probability is going to, or some, it'll say finite.
Yes, some finite. That's right.
So I think it's connected to this question. So at a certain point you had this listing of the results. You had if the concurrence is in between square root of 1/2 and 1, and the probability, you ask the probability of success is 1, you cannot distill to EPR pairs, right? So maybe you can go to...
Sure.
Yeah, so point B, I suppose.
Okay.
So if I ask here that C psi is equal, so you impose that C psi must be strictly less than 1.
Strictly less than 1, right.
Because you are saying that in that case, if it was 1,
yes,
then you could not have P dot equal
to 1.
To 1.
Yes. So what this actually shows then is that the LOCC operations as a class of operations is not closed, because you have a sequence of LOCC maps that get closer and closer to concurrence, deterministic maps that get closer and closer to 1, but that limit point where it actually is 1 is not LOCC implementable.
Unless you, so if you define what we were discussing,
the closure.
Then even including that.
You can define it, right, but that's outside LOCC, so there's no
way to implement
it. Yeah, right.
Okay, well, if there's no more questions, let's thank her again.
Great.